This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome to America's Best Baseball Podcast. We take you behind the scenes in and around Major League Baseball with former big league manager Kevin Kennedy and veteran baseball broadcaster Rich Herrera. This is the only weekly podcast hosted by someone like Kennedy, who played, coached, and managed in pro ball. So we can take you into the manager's office for a real insider's view of baseball, alongside a veteran baseball broadcaster like Herrera, who has covered the game from coast to coast. So let's talk some baseball with your hosts. Here they are, the skipper Kevin Kennedy and Rich Herrera.
Welcome, baseball fans, to America's Best Baseball Podcast. That's the skipper, Kevin Kennedy. I'm Rich Herrera. Skip, I'm excited to relaunch our podcast, a new format, and a new partner.
It's time. It's been a while, Rich, and I try to explain on Twitter a few things that have been going on, and people are expecting it because I told them we would be talking about baseball on Tuesday, and so we're back. And how you doing otherwise? Everything okay?
I'm fantastic. Went and watched a baseball game yesterday, saw a couple movies. I am excited to get back to work with you on this podcast. So there's a whole bunch of people, Kevin, that have never heard us before on the radio or on satellite radio or previous podcasts that we've ever done. So I want to introduce me to a whole new group of listeners, and we've had loyal listeners that have been with us since our days at Fox Sports and on satellite radio and our Inside the Dugout podcast, and I'm excited that we're going to launch now what we're calling America's Best Baseball Podcast. So if you don't mind, Kevin, I'm going to interview you a little bit so the brand new listeners know exactly who we are. So when we start talking baseball, they go, oh, that's where those stories come from, or oh, that makes a lot of sense. So Kevin, if you don't mind, I'm going to put the spotlight on you for just
Let's
a moment.
Let's do it. I'm ready.
All right. So Kevin Kennedy, tell me about your playing career. Tell me about where you grew up. Tell me about your professional career.
Well, Rich, I grew up in the middle of the San Fernando Valley. Graduated from Taft High School in Woodland Hills. My teammate at Taft High School was the Hall of Famer Robin Yount. While Robin signed as the third pick in the country, I moved on and went to San Diego State. I was never ready at that point of my career to go and play professional baseball. Had I signed when I was 17 or 18, I would have been released probably a year later. I was only 5'4" in the 10th grade, and by the time I was a senior at Taft, I was 6' and 160 pounds. And finally, by going to San Diego State and playing 4 years there, I was drafted in the 8th round by the Baltimore Orioles in 1976, and I was 6'3". And that turned out to be about 220 pounds, which is what my high school coach predicted. So that's the beginning of my career. Baltimore signed me. I signed within minutes, basically, of when I got drafted. And I'll tell you a quick side story on that. Back in those days, there was no TV to follow the draft like we have now, MLB TV, et cetera. So I didn't know when I got drafted. I waited all morning into the late afternoon. I never got a phone call from anybody. I had a pretty good idea to be drafted because 2 years in a row I led the PCL in those days. It was called the Pacific Coast League. PCAA, the Pacific Coast Athletic Association, is what San Diego.
I was going to say, you're not old enough to play with DiMaggio in the old PCL.
Right, exactly. Not the Seals, no. Pacific Coast Athletic Association, which is now disbanded. It's totally different where San Diego State plays. But I led the league in hitting 1 year. In my senior year, I finished second, and I was always a good defensive catcher, catch and throw guy. So Baltimore signed me. Drafted me in the 8th round and signed me, and I went to Bluefield, West Virginia, which is still, I believe, the rookie league affiliate for the Baltimore Orioles. And I moved my way up the ladder from there. Matter of fact, within 3 weeks, I went to Double A. I replaced Eddie Murray. Eddie Murray went to Triple A. I didn't replace him very well when I got the call up and skipped A ball, but nonetheless, I did move up. And then a year later, I was in Triple A. Bad news is that I stayed in AAA because I was behind a guy named Rick Dempsey, who was
pretty good.
Who was played four decades in the big leagues and was Baltimore's catcher and had signed a 5-year extension. And I had a pretty good feeling I'd be remaining in AAA unless I learned how to hit left-handed, because Earl Weaver wanted a left-handed hitting catcher, and I was not, nor was Rick Dempsey, nor was the backup catcher at that time, a guy named Dave Skaggs.
And the reason we bring this up, and I'm going to jump in here with you, Kevin, and the reason we bring this up, folks, when you listen to this podcast, you're going to hear Kevin talk about baseball from a couple different perspectives. As a player that had success, as a player that scuffled, as a player that knows what it's like to grind and work for a job, then as a manager and as a coach. So as far as inside baseball, inside the dugout, inside the clubhouse and on the field, I can't think of anybody else I'd rather do the podcast with than Kevin Kennedy, who brings that perspective of all the different aspects of baseball to what we do on a weekly basis.
You're absolutely right, Rich. And you know, a little sidebar that people may not know still to this day, because I've stayed in baseball my whole career, whether it be in uniform or now, of course, the last 20-plus years as a broadcaster, is that I went and got my accounting degree in the wintertime, in the offseason. I finished up at Cal State Northridge. When I signed out of San Diego State, because accounting was so grueling, I did not finish and graduate as far as scholastically out of San Diego State, even though I was drafted as a baseball player professionally. But I wanted to get my degree and then later take my CPA, which I did in 1984. And that would come back to help me, because I always had something to fall back on. Now, I moved my way up the ladder, as I mentioned, quickly with Baltimore, but I was stuck there. And in those days, in the 70s and 80s, and in fact, there was not minor league free agency until 1982. For the big leagues, we know it started, and it started really get rumbling in the 76 and then 77 with Dave McNally and Andy Messersmith. And if people, the youngsters listening to this, don't know who those guys are, they really started it all, and you can Google those guys. That's what started and created free agency. And you actually can get Kurt Flood, the great Cardinal player. He was in the beginning of what really created free agency as well, and basically never played again after he got traded. He refused to go to Philadelphia. That's a long story, but it's worth Googling and reading, and as a podcast.
And it's great inside Ken Burns' baseball special.
Yes, it is.
Baseball.
Yes, it is.
Ken Burns has about a half hour in it, which is intriguing.
Yes, it is. But anyway, baseball players were stuck. The AAA guys, the guys that were the minor leaguers, were stuck. In today's game, the minor leaguers, just like the big leaguers, can become 6-year free agents, and they can go get a job and maybe sign with a team as a non-roster invitee. Back in those days, you could not do that. You were stuck. And so only by the graces of the strike of 1981 that I finally, after a couple of good years in Rochester, I finally begged and pleaded to get another chance somewhere else, and I got my release. Now, not normally you don't ask for your release, but I did. I went to St. Louis, and I'll just tighten up the story because we have a lot of time to talk about this over the course of our podcast.
Yeah, and again, we're just kind of giving everybody a little insight, right, for those that are new, that aren't familiar with you or
exactly.
Me.
So what happened from there? I played a year plus with the Cardinals, didn't play much. I was invited to spring training in 1982. However, they had five roster catchers, and I was the non-roster invitee trying to play for Whitey Herzog. Well, I didn't make the club. They had guys like Gene Tennis and Darryl Porter, who were the starters, who happened to be hurt in spring training. So I got some opportunities to play. But nonetheless, within 10 days of the first homestand in Louisville, Kentucky, which was where the ball club was moved to, a man named A. Ray Smith owned the AAA club. First, it was in Springfield, Illinois, where President Lincoln was born. And then second, he moved it to Louisville, and I played in both places. And I like A. Ray Smith. A. Ray was very close to me and a very good man. And I remember going to the ballpark one day, 11 days into the season. We were going to be on a road trip, a bus trip to play Evansville, which was the Detroit Tigers AAA team. And I got released, and I didn't know it.
Wait a minute, you got to tell the story real quick. Let's drop in our first story of our new podcast. How did you find out, Kevin, you got released?
In those days, the meal money was passed out by the owner of the ball club that owned the AAA club, not the St. Louis Cardinals. The meal money came from the AAA owner and AAA general manager, which was A. Ray Smith. So I walked into the office to get my meal money for the 10-day upcoming road trip, and he said to me, how come you got released? I can't believe it. The way you play and as hard as you play, blah, 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 et cetera, et cetera. I said, I got released. Nobody told me.
Huh?
Nobody told me.
Manager didn't tell you? Farm director didn't tell you? Nobody.
Farm director, because we're open and there's a lot of transparency in our podcast, was Lee Thomas, a great baseball man. He was the farm director, and it was his job to tell me. And a guy that's managing right now, Jim Riggleman, was the third base coach in AAA that year. Now, I was supposed to play for Kenny Boyer, who I'd played for in Rochester. Unfortunately, the winter before I spring training started in 82, he contracted cancer. He passed away within 6 months. It was a shame. I mean, it was just awful. A man named Joe Frazier, a manager that managed the Mets before in the big leagues, took over. So I didn't have anybody in my corner but Jim Riggleman, who I played with in winter ball. And Jim kind of gave me some insight and said, you know, the Houston Astros want you. This is before spring training ended, because I kind of could foresee what was on handwriting on the wall, because they had...
You know what the depth chart is. You know what's in front of you.
Exactly, because they had AAA catchers that were being optioned back that were prospects that were actually ahead of me on the prospect chart, not just the two big league guys I already mentioned. So I knew what the score was. And I was not let go to Houston when they wanted me. They asked for me. In those days, too, Rich, something we should explain, you could loan players from organizations, even though they were under control. For example, I was under control by St. Louis, but if the Houston Astros needed a AAA catcher and didn't have anybody ready from AA to catch in AAA, and you had many catchers like the Cardinals did, you could call up and say, hey, I'd like to have one of your catchers. Could I have Kevin Kennedy? He already played 5 years in AAA in Rochester. We need a veteran AAA catcher to help catch our young starters in AAA and help develop them. Well, that was the case. So Jim Riggleman really was a good friend to this day, and I'm glad he's managing the Cincinnati Reds, and they're doing a great job, by the way, since he's taken over. Jimmy gave me some insight and said, I've tried to tell them to let you go to Houston, but they won't do it. They don't know when Tennyson Porter will be back, so they need you in AAA, et cetera. And bottom line is, I had an opportunity to go start and play in Houston, which really needed catching in their organization, and I probably would have gone to the big leagues with them, but nonetheless, that didn't happen. So I got my release. Well, here's the story that really became the turning point of my life. Number one, I thought to myself as I sat there talking to A-Ray, as he told me, he said, Kevin, who do you want to play for? I said, what? I said, you have that kind of power inside? Yeah. He said, yes, I do. I'm a well-known owner in AAA baseball. I'm an oil man.
Well-respected.
Well-respected man. I said, well, I'd like to play on the West Coast, because my whole career I've been on the East Coast, whether it be Rochester, spring training in Miami, et cetera, playing in North Carolina, Charlotte, North Carolina, Bluefield, West Virginia. I'd like to be on the West Coast. I'd like to either play in the PCL, as I mentioned earlier, Rich. I say I'd like to play for Tucson, Phoenix, or Albuquerque. Tucson was the Astros, AAA team. Phoenix was the Giants.
Right, the Giants.
And the Dodgers were in Albuquerque.
The Albuquerque Dukes.
And he said, hey, you want to go to Albuquerque? I said, well, that's the Dodgers. That would be a dream come true. My goodness, I grew up in Los Angeles, born and raised a Dodger fan. And anybody that knows me that is listening to this podcast is probably sick to death of hearing me tell Koufax and Drysdale stories from the 60s and Maury Wills stories, but that's how, and Vin Scully stories. But that's how I grew up, listening to Vin Scully on the old transistor radio, and he got me interested in baseball, and the rest is history. But anyway, I said, I want to play for the Dodgers. Now, I had other opportunities. I had an offer from the Milwaukee Brewers. I had an offer from the Minnesota Twins. I had an offer from the Detroit Tigers, but I said, the Dodgers, I got to go there. Now, they had Steve Yeager in those days. I mean, this is the early 80s, so Steve was still there. Socia was the big prospect who had just come up.
Was Ferguson around?
Joe Ferguson was still, I think Joe had become a coach by that time.
Okay.
Close to Tommy Lasorda. But they had Socia was the guy that was going to replace Yeager, which eventually he did. Yeager was still playing, though.
And by the way, we're going to talk about Socia in just a minute of the podcast as well. So go ahead, Kevin.
Yeah. So anyway, I go home, I fly home, Rich, and I'm with my girlfriend, who later became my wife many years later. I'm at her house. I said, I said, Kathy, I haven't taken batting practice in about 3 or 4 days, because I stayed in Louisville for a couple of days until A-Ray said, hey, they've got an opportunity for you, I believe, with the Dodgers. Get home back to L.A., and I think you're going to get a phone call. Anyway, so I decided not to sign with Milwaukee, not to sign with Minnesota or any of those other teams. And I called Frank Robinson, who I'd played for and really well in Rochester, and he didn't have an opportunity because Bob Brenly, who is now a D-backs broadcaster, he was the catcher right at that time. So Frank suggested that probably L.A. was a good opportunity for me. So I got advice from a Hall of Famer and a great baseball man in A-Ray Smith. So I flew home. As soon as I got home, it was late afternoon. Within an hour, I went to the batting cage here in the San Fernando Valley. There was a batting cage called Buddy's Bataway, right on Ventura Boulevard.
The one where you put the change inside the
machine? You put quarters inside, you put a quarter in, and you get 10 pitches. And guys like Dusty Baker and Ron Say and a lot of the Dodgers used to go there. They didn't have, in those days, batting cages in their backyard. And while they were making good money, it's not comparable even close to what it is today.
It's not like the Ripken Mansion that he's selling that has a full baseball field?
No, exactly. So they, just like a lot of the professionals that played in the San Fernando Valley or grew up in the Valley or lived in the Valley, that's where they would go. That was the only batting cage around in the west side of the Valley. So I immediately went to the batting cage and took, I don't know, about $10 and, hit for an hour. And they had a fast machine there. In fact, they call it the Koufax machine. They had a slower machine, and that would be the Don Drysdale machine. Not fair to Don because he threw pretty hard. And they would have the
Some little kid standing there with PF flyers going, yeah, come on, mister, you're hogging the machine. The rest of us want to
play. Well, I was on a machine that threw over 90 miles an hour, so that wasn't a problem. but if you wanted to hit off speed stuff, there was a machine for that as well. But there were about 7 or 8 the old iron mics. If people don't know what that is, Google that one.
Yeah, I remember those.
But it would come right over the top, and it had an arm on it, and it would just fling the ball. And those were better, actually, than the old jugs machine with the two round tires.
The spinning tires.
The ball would just shoot out of there where you wouldn't be able to develop a leg kick or a launch angle.
Right.
Or anything like that. You wouldn't have time. That's why we used our hands. We were taught to use our hands more in those days. They didn't talk about lower half like they do today. Guys didn't have the big leg kicks. And when you practiced on those machines, you didn't have time to do that. You had to react use your hands and hit fastballs, a lot like what Matt Kemp's doing today. Matt Kemp doesn't have any stride at all. He's just using his hands, and he's
absolutely like that. He's completely revitalized
exactly
his game by getting rid of all that noisy stuff from the
bottom. He's not moving his feet, and if you watch Matt Kemp, he's hitting like we did back in the 70s and 80s. He's not
he's hitting with the two-strike approach, where I'm going to shorten my swing, choke up a little bit, spread my feet, and put the ball in play, and something good's going to happen.
Including last night, where he came off the bench and hit a double and got the Dodgers rally started. Puig scored, made it 4-3. The Dodgers scored 3 runs in the bottom of the 8th, and they came back and beat the Phillies after being down 4-0. For people that watched that game last night, it was a national game. So
let me speed this up so we can get to a couple of things here. So you sign with the Dodgers.
Well,
right?
Here's the rule. I want to tell this real quick, and then we'll jump forward. So I'm at the batting cage for an hour. I get back home, and Kathy says to me, hey, a Mr. Schweppe called from the Dodgers. I said, what? What is he doing calling at 8 o'clock at night? That doesn't make sense. Well, little did I know that the farm directors were there on home days from 8 in the morning till midnight. I didn't realize that those guys worked all day and night and stayed for the game. So I called him back, and he said, Kevin, this is Bill Schweppe, the L.A. Dodgers. We have an opportunity for you. Can you be in Spokane, get on a plane to Spokane early tomorrow? You can catch the second game of a doubleheader for Del Crandall and the Albuquerque Dukes, which is the Dodgers. I said, I was already out the door before he finished his last sentence. And that's how it started. I went to Albuquerque, played on the 82 team, which was a championship team with Oral Hershiser, Alejandro Pena, Ron Reinicke. I could go on. There were so many prospects, and that's how I got into the Dodgers system. And I'll leave it right there because there's so much more.
Oh, there's, you know, he went on. He was became a minor league coach, farm director, worked with just about everybody in baseball, got an opportunity to manage. So Kevin's been around the game for a little bit, folks. When we have these conversations, and Kevin's going to bring you a perspective that you're not going to hear anybody else? Because I don't know, Kevin, and I looked it up. I don't think there's any other big league manager that's hosting a weekly podcast as the host that could give the insides we're going to give away on America's Best Baseball Podcast.
And let me just tack something real quick about you, because when I became a minor league manager, which was shortly after that, right. After my first year with the Dodgers, I still wanted to play. I was only 28, I think, 29, but they, and I'll get back to the accounting story too. I had started that winter an accounting business with a partner, and we were going to do taxes for players, and he wanted to become an agent. I did not, because I didn't want to cross that, because once you cross that barrier back then, you could never go back to being a player in uniform. That's the feeling it was anyway. And so my first two clients were my teammates, Dave Anderson and Greg Brock. And anyway, the Dodgers kept calling me and said, you know, and they started offering me a little bit of money, which was actually more than I was making in AAA, and to be a coach in Lodi. And I said, what? Lodi, A-ball. And anyway, I decided to do that, but I only did that because in the spring training, I was doing taxes at night, especially for a lot of the Latin players that needed help. Guys, there were instructors named Leo Posada and Chico Fernandez, phenomenal people. They both were Cuban, and they lived in Miami. They helped the Latin American kids, the kids that came over from the Dominican Republic and Venezuela, etc. And the kids, I did their taxes for them for free in hopes that later on that they could be my clients later on. Because I did not know that I would become a manager. But as the spring went on, I really liked it. I remember calling my partner at the end of the spring back in L.A. And I said, you know, I think I'm going to stay in this coaching thing a little bit, probably just a year or two. So I'll still help you in the wintertime, but I'm really into this. I really like coaching and teaching. And anyway, there's another story leading up to how I became a manager, but I did, and the rest is history.
Getting back to
Rich, after managing 3 years in rookie ball, I finally got promoted to A ball, and A ball was Bakersfield. That was our A affiliate back in those days. And Rich, this is how I met Rich. You know, subliminally, I guess I met Rich.
Exactly.
Because I could hear this voice yelling at me. And Rich, you want to take it from there?
Screaming. So they would have promotions like they do in all minor league cities, and one of them was quarter beer night or cheap beer night, maybe dime beer night back then. And I would go to the games, and I would stand behind the Dodgers dugout, the B Dodgers dugout, and I would just scream at the top of my lungs at the manager of the Bakersfield Dodgers. I'd yell about his mustache. I'd yell about the way he stood. I'd yell about his team. I would just heckle him all night long until I got kicked out. Lo and behold, all these years later, that manager turns out to be Kevin Kennedy. And we've been stuck together ever since. We worked at Fox Sports Radio together. We worked in Tampa Bay together. We work in satellite radio together. And we work here. So I'm not sure that was the best or worst day of your life, Kevin, but you're stuck with me nonetheless.
No, it turned out great, because years later, you were working in the Bay Area for clubs. I got the chance of managing the big leagues. You interviewed me, and then later on.
And you were a good interview. You were pretty easy
to
interview.
Well, you know, I think that's why I got into broadcasting, because I felt that the media was really an important part of promoting our game and explaining how and why I did some of the things I did as a manager. I used to tell our team broadcasters, I said, hey, when I do the manager's show every day after yesterday's game, and we do it the next afternoon prior to the next game, I would say, hey, ask me the tough questions. Don't be soft on me. Ask me why I did what I did last night. Ask me why I pitch ran for this guy, or why I put the hit and run on, or why I did the run and hit play, or why I put the safety squeeze on, etc. And I want to explain to the fans, you know, I want to teach them why I'm doing what I'm doing. And that's how I became, as you said, a good interview. I felt like I could articulate that over the air. And so years later, after my career in uniform was done, I got an opportunity to do that. And I've been doing it ever since, broadcasting in one way or the other, whether it be TV or radio, since 1997.
So when we talk about things in the game of baseball, Kevin's been a player. With success, like I said earlier, struggles. He's been a coach. He's been a manager. He's been a farm director. He's done everything that you can do in the game. I've worked in front offices before. I broadcast. I was a post-game show host for the Giants, the A's, did minor league play-by-play for the Diamondbacks, Tampa Bay, and last year in San Diego. So we're going to come at this in a whole different direction because we're going to be able to tell you what goes on inside the front office. I've been in meetings with general managers. He's been in meetings with general managers. You're going to hear a different perspective because we could take you inside the game, probably better so than anything else that you're going to find out there podcast-wise, and that's why we hope you enjoy our bi-weekly podcast. We'll be doing this twice a week for you. But today, just wanted to kind of introduce ourselves in our very first podcast here that we're titling now America's Best Baseball Podcast. So, Kevin, let's jump into a couple of baseball news
let's
and notes.
It.
Give me the state of the game right now. Let's talk about the National League West that I was bragging during spring training. This is going to be the best division of baseball. This turns out to be a division where nobody could get it right, and everybody keeps spinning their wheels.
Well, listen, Rich, you've worked for the MLB Network radio channel off and on for a while. I was I'm the last guy standing and since 05 of MLB Network Radio, which then was called XM Radio, now Sirius XM Radio. I worked with Rob Dibble the first 3 years, and I've been there ever since. The last few years as a part-timer. And what we both have to do when we work that show is do our preseason picks of all the divisions and the World Series, etc. And I picked the Dodgers to repeat.
No, I can't believe
that.
Well,
what people will find out about me is, yes, I'm a Dodger fan. I grew up a Dodger fan. But I am not biased as far as my constructive criticism. If they do something that needs to be talked about, I'll bring it up. I'm not afraid to do that. Nobody has ever told me in the front office, hey, you can't say that on the air. You can't do that. Nobody's ever put a governor on me. And they've heard me long enough that they know I'm not going to rip anybody, whether it be the opposing team or the home team, as far as getting personal or really yell at them or make it bad. I'm just going to explain, you know, what they were thinking, what they could have done, what they should be thinking, and what they
and then yelling and screaming.
And then what they did do, and then Rich can do the yelling and screaming at them. So I picked the Dodgers, not because of last year and not because of my bias, because I'm working for them and doing 40 games on radio this year again for them, like I have the last 2 years. I picked them based on my evaluation of the talent. And the more you hear our podcast, you know that I'm a real big believer in seeing people in person to evaluate. Statistics are great. They give you historical information, but players make adjustments.
They have a place in our game.
They have a place.
They have a place in
our
game.
They have a place, yeah. Absolutely. But I felt the best scouts, and I still feel this way, scout by the eye test. Because you can see if a guy's made an adjustment. And, you know, I'll give you an example. Matt Kemp, when he walked into spring training this year, I heard he lost 40 pounds. When I saw him, I walked right past him. I didn't recognize him. I thought it was a kid of the age of 22. He lost 40 pounds. He changed his swing, and now he's second or third in the league in hitting. That's how people make adjustments. If you go by on what he did the last 3 years or 4 years, you wouldn't have signed him. You wouldn't have traded for him. So that's why the stats are great, but you also have to look at the eye test. Well, wait a minute. He's made an adjustment. He's doing something different now. Those reports that I'm getting are not accurate because this guy has changed in the last couple of weeks. And yes, big league players have the ability to adjust if they want to and make changes. So as far as that, though, I picked the Dodgers, Rich, and I thought Colorado and Arizona would be battling for the wild card again. I did not, and I picked the Washington Nationals. Let's just stay with the National League for a moment. Yeah. I picked the Nationals going away. I had no clue that Philadelphia would be as good as they are, nor the Atlanta Braves. Because, why? Because I haven't seen Albies in person or Acuna in person. And I saw the depth of the Washington Nationals, if they're healthy, as a team that, with Scherzer at the top and Strasburg, as a team that should blow that division away. Not necessarily go through the playoffs again, and maybe they lose in the first round, but I thought they'd win the division easily.
They'd be the class of the division.
And we are at the one-third point, so it's a good time to talk about our podcast, bringing it up the last two-thirds of the regular season, because 54 games in is what the Dodgers are at and most teams are at. That's one-third of a season, and that's what I always felt as a manager. Anywhere from 40, the quarter pole to the one-third mark, that generally gives you an idea of where your club is at, what kind of ball club you have. There's enough at-bats by that time. There's enough starting appearances by the starters at that time. Injuries, of course, crop up for all teams at that time. You can see the depth you have in the minor leagues at that time. And so now we look around Major League Baseball, and you got to ask yourselves, and I do, are the Braves for real? Haven't seen them in person yet, but I see they're in first place. Are the Phillies for real? I have a take on the Phillies, for example, after watching them last night in person for the first time versus just watching them from afar and seeing that they're playing really, really well. The Nationals, saw them in person a lot recently. And without Murphy and Adam Eaton in there, they are a different team. That lineup is not very deep because why? They don't have the depth of replacements like some of the organizations do, like I feel the Dodgers do. So when the Dodgers have Kershaw going down, and by the way, he's going to start on Thursday. He's had bicep tendonitis. When you have Ryu, who was pitching phenomenally, go down, he's not going to be back till after the All-Star break. You're going, well, who's going to replace those guys? Well, how about Walker Buehler and Ross Stripling? Check those guys out.
Filthy.
Most organizations don't have two guys like that that can step in and replace a Kershaw.
Most organizations don't have enough depth in their starting
rotation to do that. That's my point. So I knew they had those guys if something happened, and they've stepped in and done an incredible job. I think the one thing for the Dodgers, losing Corey Seager is huge, and a lot of people want to see Machado being traded there. I don't think that's going to happen because knowing Dan Duquette like I have, I worked for him in Montreal and in Boston, he's going to ask for the moon, and especially Walker Buehler, and we know that's not happening.
Why wouldn't he?
And then let's take the National League Central. I didn't know Cincinnati would come into L.A. and sweep the Dodgers four straight. Now, I didn't pick Cincinnati, but their leading hitter in the National League, who would have picked at this point, Scooter Gennett? The guy's a different hitter than he was 3 years ago. He's turned into a launch angle guy. He hits for power. He's got a better eye tracking the ball. He uses the field. He's a different hitter. He's leading the National League in hitting. So, anyway, most people thought, well, the West, as you said to begin this portion of the podcast, would be the dominant division. It's not so. Arizona does not have the depth that people thought they did it. We thought Goldschmidt would have his normal year. He's not. He's having a terrible year.
They missed
J.D. Martinez, who was a phenomenal pick for Boston, which is why when Boston got J.D. Martinez, that was the turning point for me. I picked Boston over New York on my preseason picks with
everybody laughed at us.
But I thought that was enough because why? You and I both saw JD that he was for real with those 45 plus home runs that he hit. I mean,
and he made Goldie
He protected Goldie. And no disrespect to Chris Owings, but Goldie's not getting a pitch to hit. Now, even with Pollock he's going to be out for 8 weeks. Goldie's really not getting anything to hit. So what is he doing? Hitters start expanding their own zone. He's not taking as many walks. He's swinging at bad pitches. He's got the highest swing and miss percentage of guys.
He's not just waiting for those
mistakes. No, he's not getting mistakes. And so he's trying to force the action. Why? Because if he takes a walk, Chris Owings is hitting .183 or .193 right now. They just don't have the depth. So Arizona is not as deep as people thought. And Colorado is playing okay. They're in first place over the Dodgers by 3.5 games, and Arizona is now in second place. But it's basically a division that's been hovering just a couple of games above the 500 mark. So,
I mean, you look at everybody. The Colorado Rockies 5-5 over the last 10 days. Arizona 2-8. Dodgers have gotten hot, beating up on the Padres. They go 8-2. San Francisco 3-7. San Diego 5-5. I look at it. I thought we'd naturally see a regression for Arizona. They don't have the guns that they had, and I thought J.D. Martinez was going to be a big minus for them. I knew that Bud Black was going to have Colorado challenging for first, if not the wild card. The Dodgers, they didn't see any of the injuries. In San Francisco, a second year in a row, they lose Mad Bum, and now Cueto's out for a little bit. But the whole thing is, I look at the division, and San Diego's real, real young, and their time is coming in the next couple of years. But I look at this division. If I'm San Francisco, and I've just dropped down to fourth place, I'm not panicking if I'm Bruce Bochy. I'm four games back. That's 10 days of getting hot inside the division. I'm back in first place, and that's the same for Doc Roberts with the Dodgers. That's the same for the Arizona Diamondbacks, same for the Colorado Rockies. This is so winnable right now at Memorial Day. It's amazing that this thing is so grouped up the way it is.
Well, I tweeted about, 2.5-3 weeks ago that this is a winnable division. This was when the Dodgers were 10 games under 500.
Right.
And now I think they're 3 games under. And a lot of people on Twitter, said, Kevin, you're drinking the Kool-Aid, et cetera. I figured it was in a different name. I figured that. Some Dodger fans said, hey, Kevin, you've talked me from walking off the ledge. Thanks a lot. Appreciate that. But a lot of people out there, thought it was ridiculous that the season was over. National analysts, I heard.
Oh, they were trying to bury Doc Roberts.
He was getting fired, and the Dodgers were done. Especially when Corey Seager went down.
Could you go pry Dusty Baker away from that special assistant job in San Francisco and go get him? Absolutely, everybody thought that.
And
he
this
was
is why our podcast, Rich, is exactly what you said, and you named it. So I'm going to tag that one on you, the best podcast. I really believe that because I've heard all the other ones. I really have. And I am into social media today. I think you have to be to keep up on what's going on, and if you want the information quickly. And when I saw and heard analysts from around the country, whether they hate the Dodgers or not, just sparing the Dodgers, saying they're done, they're going to finish just ahead of the Padres. Those are going to be the cellar dwellers. That's what prompted me to tweet when I tweeted three weeks ago or so. And it was based on my evaluation of what I see, not what somebody else said. Because if you haven't seen a team a lot, and I watch the Arizona Diamondbacks a lot, I'm working 40 games on radio for the Dodgers, mostly with Rick Monday, which means I'm not at Dodger Stadium every night. I go even when I'm not working their game, but I go not only to evaluate the Dodgers, to go see the opposing team.
I want to see everybody else. Yeah.
And also when you work a national radio show like SiriusXM, which mostly I do on Saturday nights with Sam Ryan, you have to know all the teams, the American League too. And I watch all the games, but in particular, right, the National League West. So I really watch the Rockies a lot, and I watch the Giants a lot, and I watch the D-backs a lot. And that's what prompted me to tweet what I tweeted a few weeks ago about this is a winnable division. The Dodgers can pick up two games a week, and here's how you do it, et cetera. You could probably still find the tweet. And that's exactly what they've done. In fact, they're ahead of schedule. They went right from nine back, 8.5 to nine back at the time I tweeted, to 3.5 games back. I said
the only winning record in the last 10 days in the National League West. All right, I want to bring something else up, Kevin, because we promised. That's the other thing. We're going to try to keep it about 45
right.
minutes
yeah.
For each podcast. So it's enough that you can either fall asleep listening to us or for your run or for your bike ride or for your ride to work as well. So we don't want to go longer than that because we want to be able to have it manageable for you as well. I do want to bring up something out of the National League West.
1-0. Ground ball to short. Rodriguez will throw to the plate for one. Diaz fires it over the head of the first baseman, Diaz. And Diaz, Elias Diaz is hurt. Josh Bell had no chance. Elias Diaz is rolling on the ground in front of the dirt circle in pain as the slide from Rizzo not only toppled Elias Diaz, and Clint Hurdle goes to the home plate umpire first to argue about that slide while Elias Diaz is flat on his back on the grass. And meanwhile, two more runs scored.
Rizzo, did you see
yes.
the slide against the Pittsburgh Pirates?
Yes.
So it's a bang-bang play at the plate. Sean Rodriguez at shortstop fires the ball home to start the 6-2-3 double
right.
play. Shortstop to the catcher to the first base to get the hitter. So Rizzo's at third base, bears down at Diaz, the catcher. Diaz, the catcher, steps in the plate, shuffles forward straight towards the pitcher's mound, and Rizzo comes and clips his ankle and takes it out from underneath him. What were your thoughts on the play?
Absolutely a clean play. I agree 100% with Joe Maddon. I agree 100% with Eric Burns. I saw Eric get very angry at Brian Kenny and very assertive on that. With Ron Darling was there explaining that. I saw that live. I saw him explain it. I totally agree with especially Joe Maddon, what he said. If you can't do that, sliding through home plate, and yeah, stick out your left leg, if the catcher's right there within that distance, and you can't get out of the way as a catcher, that's your fault. First of all, you don't take the ball from behind home plate on the infield in like that in a play at home plate. You take the ball with your feet, your back foot on the edge of the black of home plate.
So like you're a first baseman.
Exactly. Therefore, you can clear yourself. And the reason you do that is so you can clear yourself from the runner. Now, I heard Ron Darling say, well, he didn't turn and stride toward first base. Well, that's not actually true because the throw is from shortstop. So you've got to stretch toward shortstop to make sure that you've got that lead out. You can't stretch toward first base or slide toward, you know, shuffle immediately toward first base. He did the right thing there, but the problem was, he was behind home plate to take the throw and then shuffled his feet across the plate. Therefore, he was not a foot and a half, 2 feet further out in front when he did decide to square up toward first base to make his return throw to get the double play. And that's what enabled Rizzo to get a piece of him. So that was not a dirty play. That was a clean play. I would teach differently, and I did teach differently. I was a roving catching instructor for the Dodgers for many years on blocking the play, which they don't do anymore, but especially on that double play ball, so you don't get clipped like that on where to take the throw. And it's definitely like a first baseman, not from behind the bag from behind home plate at first, and then sliding your feet across the home plate and then taking the throw, because you can get hurt for that very reason we just described.
Now, Major League Baseball's come out the day after and said that interference should have been called on Anthony Rizzo for the slide at home plate. Both teams were informed of MLB's decision. Taking out the leg right there is interference. So you're already out, right? Are you allowed to leave the width of the base path to go clip him, to go get him? I understand that the catchers probably should have shuffled out a little bit more to make that throw, but he still interferes with him trying to make a play, which I can understand where baseball is coming at it, that it's interference.
Well, this is my problem with some of the rules today. When Buster Posey got hurt, he didn't get hurt because Cousins came in and ran out of the baseline to take him out. Yes, he did do that, but that's not why he got hurt. He got hurt because he was in a bad position and he was blindsided. He was way out in front of the plate. The throw was coming from right center field. He had no vision of where the runner was, and he got
his knees and his ankles and his hips were locked underneath
him. Exactly, where he couldn't roll, and that's how he twisted and broke his ankle when he got hit. Here's the thing that in those days, in which you don't have to do anymore, but what you should have done, you got to be back on the plate on a throw from right field, especially so you have vision where the runner is at all times. And it's something that Mike Socia taught and did, and was the best.
And he was so good at taking that blow.
He was the best.
Taking the energy, and then he would hold on to the ball, and the umpire would look down. And
exactly.
We've seen it a million times. Umpire would point down at Socia. He holds up the ball.
Exactly. You don't ever lose sight of where the runner is. Now, if the ball's hit the left field or center field, you can see where the runner is. You can see if he's going to take you out, if he's going to try to go around you, if he's going to try to slide. But from right field or right center, you can't see when you're way out in front. That's why you stay deeper on the plate. Your feet actually straddle the home diamond of home plate. That's where your feet straddle, so you can see where the ball's coming from and you can see where the runner is. And you know when the runner's coming that he has to go through you to score. Now, if you don't want to get hit and you're one of those guys that wants to get out of the way and you see the runner staying up, you can do that and you can olay it. You can get out of the way.
You can do the
swipe tag. So you got it. So that's.
And the umpire has been trained to know where I stand if you're going to set up for a swipe or you're going to take the collision.
Rich, you should have been a catcher. You got it perfectly. You understand it. Well, the point.
See, I've been hanging around you long enough.
The point being, that rule never should have had to be put in play because, Buster, no disrespect to Buster, but he obviously wasn't taught right. And if he was taught to stay away from home plate so he wouldn't get hurt, well, to me, that was a mistake because anytime you start teaching that and playing the game where, well, you know what, we want to take it easy. Don't run hard because, we don't want to get hurt. I saw a guy do that on Twitter to me, a few people on Bryce Harper the other day when I said, Bryce Harper's not running. And I said, yeah. And they said, well, he got hurt last year running hard. I said, yeah, because he started running when he realized he had a chance to beat it out. And he started running too late and got in between and hit the bag. And the field was wet that day. The bag was wet. And that's how he almost, was out for the rest of the year with a knee problem by hyperextending his knee. If you play the game the so-called right way, you play it hard, you play it correctly, you're set up correctly, you're taught correctly where to be at all times, yes, there's going to be contact, but you got a chance to really not be hurt, or you got a way to ways to get out of the way, just like middle infielders do.
Right.
I talked to Nomar Garciaparra a lot. He's still upset that you can't, at second base, you can't have the neighborhood play for infielders, and he liked it when runners would try to take him out. You just jump over him, and there's ways
and
you learn.
And we'll talk about it later. We'll talk about it later in the podcast. There's ways to protect yourself.
So anyway, point being, I understand where MLB's coming from, but the bottom line is if you teach kids and players to play the game and be set up the right way, you won't have these injuries, and we wouldn't have all these rules that are being put in play right now and I heard Eric Burns say this because he covers college baseball. College baseball, they go at it. They take infield. They can break up double plays, et cetera. They can do things. But in big league baseball now, we're doing what little league does.
But Rizzo, but this is not the first time that Rizzo has taken a catcher out and people weren't happy about it. Because remember, he did it last year to Austin Hedges, where Hedges is clearly out of the way, and he just went and bowled him over, took him out. He broke the rule then, and then he stood there and goes, well, I was taught it was game on once somebody has the ball, which is not true anymore. Joe stood up for him, and now he's doing it again.
That's egregious. That was an egregious play. This one wasn't as egregious as that because –
No, it
because
was not.
Diaz was there. If Diaz is cleared like he should have been.
Is another foot away,
then,
we don't have a problem.
Then if Rizzo goes after him, I 100% agree that he should be fined, suspended. The game should have been turned around, whatever. But because Diaz didn't get out of the way and had the ball, I think it is game on. I still have that mentality.
But he's not trying to – well, I guess he is trying
to break up
the double
play. Trying to win a game, like Eric Burns said. He's trying to win a game.
He's trying to win a game, but he's trying to break up the double play. But he still doesn't have does he have the right to go and interfere with the second half of that throw when you're already out? I know they do it at second base, so I'm just trying to search for the rhyme or reason why it's interference or not interference.
Because he still was sliding across the plate. He was just sliding on the inside part of the plate, not the outside part. He was still sliding across the plate. Now, did he stick his leg out? Yeah, he did.
Absolutely,
and that's where
it becomes interference because he's not trying to get to the base.
Yes, he did. He went right across the base, but at the same time, he had his leg out.
Okay, so
he did both because he was allowed.
I guess the rule is you have an arm's length to get to the base.
He was allowed to because the defensive player was right there. It's just on a double play. If you turn a double play today, and the second baseman's right there, and only a foot across the bag, you can still go right through the bag. And you could slide to the inside part of the bag and still hit the bag and not make it look egregious. You know what I'm saying? That looked right. A little bit more egregious because you saw him stick his leg out at the last instant. If he just kept sliding.
I don't have a problem with that.
Through Diaz, he would have taken him out. He would have put it on the same thing.
Because he sticks his leg out, he's right down the line. He actually comes inside and attempts to make contact with the catcher. I guess that's where my problem is.
Was still across the plate at the same time. You've got to clear yourself, and that's the same thing is at home plate. If the ball's at home plate, and let's say that's not a force play, and you're there as a catcher, you have the right to take him over, take him down. That's what Rizzo was thinking. He was right there close enough where I can take him out. Because you got to clear yourself if you're going to be right there.
Right, and I'm looking at the replay right now.
I saw it ten times today.
Yeah, he's about a foot in front of the plate. He's a step in front of the plate, but he's also still completely on the dirt. So, like you said, if he would have started taking the ball in front, stretching towards Sean Rodriguez for the throw, by the time he shuffles out the two steps, he's in the grass, and Rizzo doesn't have a chance
to take
him out.
Absolutely. No, you push hard off that corner, that front plate. You take that ball, you stretch like a first baseman if it's going to be bang, bang, and you go toward it and clear yourself completely. Then you turn and square up to your right toward your first baseman, and you throw a strike. You would be on the dirt. I mean, you would be on the grass almost. It wouldn't even be a close play. There would be no contest at all.
Now, I get it. And that's the thing. When we have these things happening, it's usually one or two players miscalculating something or stepping the wrong way that changes the whole complexity at that play at the last second.
But, you know, and I heard Diaz say, well, we don't play old school anymore. That's just a good baseball play. That has nothing to do with old school. That's a good baseball play in my mind, just like Joe Maddon said. I got to tell you, I 100% agree with Joe Maddon. I saw his rant. And actually, you know what's funny about that? I wasn't watching that particular game. When I saw the rant, I thought Joe had it overturned. I thought it was against him. He was ranting.
Right. But Joe, and we both know Joe, we both worked with him. He's going to stand up to his player for his player, come hell or high water, even if he knows the player might, you know, a little close. He's always going to stand up for his guy.
I can't say that I would have said that. I would say, I'll just say this. Chase Utley, that was a shame what Chase Utley did in the playoffs to the Mets a few years ago. Now,
but that's why people will run through walls for Joe
Now, Matt. What Jimmy Rollins said, and he was a Dodger at that time, he said that was a bad play by the shortstop. You never turn your back to the play,
right.
And that's what the shortstop did. So both guys, one was an egregious slide to take him out in the playoffs. That's how Chase Utley was taught. And the other thing was the shortstop took the throw and did a reverse 360, and you never take your eyes off the player coming in.
No.
So that was Jimmy Rollins saying the shortstop made a mistake. I personally thought it was an egregious slide. So did MLB.
And we're talking about that play in the playoffs. It was a Phillies and Dodgers. Utley.
No, it was a Dodgers and Mets.
Dodgers and Mets. Dodgers and Mets.
He broke the shortstop's ankle.
Right. And in fact, we were on. Weren't we on satellite radio that night? And Steve Sachs called in to talk about it.
I don't know that I was on radio that night because I was.
I think I was. Okay.
I was covering the playoffs for the Dodgers. I don't know.
Oh, that's right.
I don't think I was on. But I thought right after that, I said, "Well, there's going to be."
We did a show. We did a show. You and I did a show right after that together, and we threw and Sachs came on and talked about using the base as a
roadblock.
Yes,
he did. Yes, he did. You're right. Yes, he did. I don't know if it was that night, but it was. Yeah,
it was right after that. Yeah. All right. Well, hey, listen. Now we have something fun to talk about in our first podcast. We're going to release these podcasts every Tuesday and Thursday. You can find them on Apple Podcasts. You can find them on Stitcher, TuneIn, and now Radio.com. And the Radio.com app is where you'll be able to find us every week. So that's the skipper, Kevin Kennedy. You can always find him on Twitter at Kevin Kennedy MLB. My name is Rich Rare. You can find me at RBI Rich. And every week, we're going to sit around and we're going to talk a lot of baseball with you on our brand new podcast, America's Best Baseball Podcast. Thanks for joining us, everybody.
Thanks for joining us for America's Best Baseball Podcast. Our podcast was produced by Braden Supernant. Find us on Facebook at America's Best Baseball Podcast. You can find Kevin at Kevin Kennedy MLB on Twitter, and you can find Rich on Twitter at RBI Rich. Football fans, the NFL draft is almost here, and the Free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. AUDACY. Download it today.